Time to go back to the beginning and do it all over again on Overview with Asteroid G. You're listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, the number one choice among people who work at Asteroid G. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein. With me, as always, is...
Josh Schaefer.
Queen B.
And Bex.
Today we are going to be doing an overview of The Good Place, a show that actually wrapped up, a couple months ago, and somehow we haven't yet really talked about.
Which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. I mean, we needed to wait until the show wrapped up before we did a proper overview of it, but that show is so good.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, not to name drop, but.
Not to name drop. The
entire thing is about name dropping.
No, I think this is probably the best. I don't know if I'd really classify it as a sitcom or not, but.
It's a sitcom.
Probably
I mean,
the best.
It's not the standard set single camera with laugh track that you get from like Cheers or something else, despite the fact that Ted Danson was on the show. It's more in line with the current setup of sitcoms that we have now, like The Office and Parks and Rec and all, which, I mean, kind of has a pedigree coming down the line from those ones because of the producers that worked on it.
Mm-hmm. But Michael Shore did all of those.
Yeah, but it still would be considered a comedy, situational, I guess. I guess the figuring out the term of what sitcom really means is what we need to decide on there.
Yeah, like, it's a sitcom since it was on, well, it was on, what, NBC? So, so that puts it kind of more in the sitcom thing in my brain, but at the same time, it's too smart, I think, for TV, and I'm surprised that it lasted four seasons.
I mean, it was short seasons, but I'm pretty sure that it had, like, they had an agreement going in about what they were going to do and how it was, but it was so critically praised and got so much, like, awards and everything else that it doesn't surprise me. Okay, so for those that are curious, the definition of a sitcom is, of course, situational comedy, a comedy where characters carry over from one episode to the next. They call it that in comparison to sketch comedy, where a troupe uses new characters each time, or stand-up comedy of a single comedian. That's why it's a sitcom. I don't... Whatever, it's a comedy.
I never knew that.
Yeah,
me neither. I have learned something this day.
So yes, it is a sitcom because it's meant for comedy and it's the same characters from episode to episode.
Oh.
Yeah.
I will have to say that the continuity in this show is brilliant.
It's the type of thing where I just, you know, at some point you're like, okay, the twists, like, you're either going to see them coming or they'll run out, but, like, no, it just was always fresh.
Well, that's getting us into the meat of the show right there. So let's start off with this and go over the basics of what we have going on here. So The Good Place, which ran for 4 years, four seasons, I guess, however you want to put it, involves the lead character, Eleanor Shellstrop. Kristen Bell plays her, who ends up in The Good Place after she dies. Everyone in The Good Place thinks that she's a fantastic person. What, she went, like, on a hunger strike for a month as one of her things. She helped orphans in Haiti. And, like, every good thing you could think a person could do, Eleanor apparently did. So she made it into The Good Place, where she gets to hang out with other good people. We have Chidi Agonye, who a professor of ethics, and Tahani Al-Jamil, a British philanthropist, and... Then there was, I gotta find his original name. Jian Yu, there you go.
Jian Yu.
Well, yeah, but we find that out eventually. But Jian Yu, who is a Tibetan monk. But as we discover, not only does Kristen Bell's character, Eleanor Shellstrop, not belong in The Good Place because she's been confused with a different Eleanor Shellstrop, and as Kristen Bell's character puts it, she's actually a trash person who doesn't belong anywhere near The Good Place. But we discover over the course of the first season that basically none of the people that she's met, Chidi or Tahani or, as we've eventually learned, Jason Mendoza, who really isn't a Tibetan monk, none of them deserve to be in The Good Place. And that sets up the plot of the rest of the show, where we realize they're actually in the bad place and they have to figure out how to actually get into The Good Place one way or another. Oh yeah, and spoilers.
And spoilers.
So, I guess the first question is, when you were watching the first season of the show, did that first twist get you off guard?
No.
No?
Not really.
Mm-mm. Yeah, one of the things that my son always says is he hates watching TV with me because I guess the plot.
Okay.
Before the plot is the plot.
Okay.
I go, and basically I go, well, if I was writing this, this is how I would do it. So I'm very pleasantly not surprised by shows as I go, okay, well, that's what I would have done. So that makes sense.
I mean, introducing Eleanor and saying within the first episode that she didn't belong to deserve to be there certainly set up the meat of what could have been a very basic four-season sitcom where week to week she learns a new lesson and slowly over the course of 4 or 6 or 8 years she becomes a better person until the finale of the show, she's just automatically allowed to stay in the good place anyway. That right. is not the plot of what the show went for. That would have been an easy plot, and this show was not going for easy plots.
Yeah, like, the twist, are you talking about the twist where she's actually in hell?
Yes. Well, all four of our main characters.
So, like, I kind of saw it coming just based off of, I don't know, just, like, the demeanor of Ted Danson's character and Michael. Some of the others, like, mm-hmm. Michael, yeah. It just seemed a little too coincidental.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I couldn't really suspend belief that someone in heaven wouldn't, or the good place, I guess we can't say heaven, but someone in the good place wouldn't realize that they got the wrong person. So
they cover for it pretty well when you watch it the first time by having him be a new architect setting up his own little good place neighborhood and desperate to try and make it work and ignore many of the issues that are going on in the neighborhood. That's the setup of it, even though you know that's not the actual truth of it eventually. For some people, myself included, it glossed over like some of the flaws in the neighborhood and you were able to suspend disbelief. Plus, of course, being a sitcom, having weird situations and dumb things come up that Michael has to try and brush off for comedy's sake made sense.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. But like it was just like, I think like B, I was just kind of like, oh, I think this is what's happening.
That's fair.
I remember saying that to Josette and Josette was like, I don't think so.
And then it was.
And I was like, point for me.
Becky.
But there were some.
Let's check it. How did the twist work for you? Did it catch you off guard?
Well, like at the very beginning, mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it was, you know, like a big brain. Whoa, what?
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, all right, so this is how things are getting set up here. This is what's going to make the show interesting. Mm-hmm. I guess when I mentioned twists, it's like, you know, at the end and beginning of each season, how it seems like everything will change.
Yeah, they do kind of recontextualize the show from season to season.
Yeah, and that's what...
And that was good and different. Yeah,
that one kept blowing my mind, mm-hmm. where I'm like, okay, I did not see this coming.
Mm-hmm. Josh, you were going to say?
I was going to say, I thought that the bigger twist for me was when they figured or found out about all the reboots that they did because the
that was
experiment
amazing.
Kept... Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing that... So the show, in reinventing itself, found new ways to kind of twist the formula up. So the first season establishes that the characters are actually in the bad place, or hell, or whatever you want to call it, but the show calls it the bad place. And by the end of the season, they figure it out. And they're going to be like, okay, well, we're going to be able to use this knowledge and figure out how to become better people. And then Michael, the demon running the quote unquote good place, reboots everything, snaps his fingers, wipes their memories, and resets it so they can run the experiment again. Because normally, as we learn, the bad place is a bad place where they torture people physically, for eternity, basically. But as the show goes on, you learn that this good place experiment that Michael set up was to kind of mentally torture people by having them do the torture themselves because they're all bad people and they can't help it. So it was kind of weird, but in the process it proved that humans can be better, at least in the show's opinion. So that by, like, he starts rebooting things and trying to run the experiment again, and... Like, what was it? But they got, like, 800 reboots in the span of a couple of episodes or something,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
is hilarious. And then over the course of the show, then, they decide maybe being better people is actually the right thing to do, and they start actively trying to get into the good place, and then they end up back on Earth to retry their lives again before finally getting to run their own version of The Good Place to show, yes, good people can actually be good if they're given the chance. Like, the show just constantly reinvented its basic premise.
Well, my favorite part of the entire show was the cocaine user in the middle, in the limbo.
Oh, God. The medium place.
She's hilarious. Yes, the medium place.
Yeah, I can't remember what her name was.
The boss from Workaholics, I think. That's her name.
Mindy St. Clair.
Yeah, Mindy St. Clair.
Yeah, she is the one person stuck in the medium place. A neither good nor bad place, but a compromised place, because while she was a terrible person in life, right at the point of her death, she did something so overwhelmingly good, it almost balanced it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, man, I'm trying to think of my favorite part of the show, but there's just so many good jokes. Like, one of my favorite gags is Jason's butthole.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it just makes me laugh every time I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the butthole.
The butthole.
It's like,
yeah.
You want to see my butthole? But William Jackson Harper as Chidi is probably my favorite part about that show.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything about him is kind of relatable in a way, because when I was younger, I was fairly indecisive, so I get that mental struggle, and I also enjoy reading about ethics and stuff, not to the same extent as he does, obviously, but just like his emotional breakdown, like when he's at the store and he just like is walking around without his shirt on and he makes like candy chili for his ethics class and all that. Like, there was something very identifiable about that. Just like the complete breakdown. But yeah, Chidi was, he's my boy.
The interesting part about the entire show is that you come to this realization that it really doesn't matter. It's like, it's still the, you know, how these people got into the bad place. They used what society typically views as bad and good. You know, what's considered bad, what's considered good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really think about it, there's really nothing that is extraneously bad, and there's really nothing really good that anybody that they participated with actually did. I mean, Jamila, Tahani's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She was the, you know, she was the humanitarian, blah, blah, blah. She was the artist. She did all these neat things, and she was loved by her parents. And basically the parents treated Tahani differently because she wasn't as talented as her sister. But that didn't make her any less of a person. She just craved for their affection. And so that was considered a sin in this whole dynamic of bad place, good place, medium place. And because she craved her parents' attention instead of being her own person, she was sent to the good place. You know what I'm saying? Which is, i.e., the bad place.
Yeah.
Chidi, who was an ethics teacher, professor, basically held people to a higher standard. And by doing that, that made him a bad person. Mm-hmm. Or to holding them to a standard that's unrealistic. And therefore, because he's an ethics professor, therefore by essentially causing him to have the same ethical moral dilemmas that everybody else in the world has. Jason's just stupid. So, I mean, he did things based on what his peers were doing. And so he didn't necessarily do bad things. He just did things that other people were doing around him. So he just played the same role. Shellstrop is the only one who basically lived her life the way that she wanted to live it. And it wasn't necessarily the best thing, you know, to do. I mean, she wasn't a nice person, but she wasn't necessarily a bad person either. She was just living her life according to how she was taught to live her life. So you know, if you really want to take the whole, I know this isn't supposed to, you're not supposed to bring in the whole religious aspect of this because they couldn't call it heaven or whatever. But if you were to bring a whole religious aspect into this whole thing, the Bible says if you go to church and you repent, that you aren't going to be, you know, judged. Now, none of these people went to church, obviously, but there's a lot of gray area. And I think the show actually kind of brings that out and shows, hey, this is all gray area. These people aren't necessarily bad nor good. They're just trying to be better, well, whatever that means to society.
Something the show points out is the fact that in the continuity of this series, no one has ended up in the true good place for over 500 years, which kind of shows that the creator's opinion, the whole you can do whatever you want so long as you repent right beforehand is a load of crap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, because they had that whole story with, what was his name, Doug?
Yeah.
Where he got really high on, I think it was on acid, and figured out, for the most part, how the good place versus bad place worked, and he lived his life in order to get as many points as possible to go to the good place, but still went to the bad place.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was very telling of the underlying, philosophy of the story.
Well, 100 years. Well, yeah. This show is basically within the last 4 years, right? So it's 2016 to 2020.
Yep.
Right. So in the last 500 years, we're talking the 1500s. And I hate to tell you, there are a lot of people in the 1500s who are just crappy people.
Oh, yeah.
Burning witches. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so you have to go like 600 years back, 1400s. And I'm sure there weren't good people back then either. I mean, the human race is garbage.
For sure.
I mean that in the most loving way.
What,
but
one big orb of Arizona, as the show would put it.
But, you know, you try to be a better person, and sometimes it's going to bite you in the ass. And basically, being good or bad, you just got to kind of cross your fingers and hope that you don't hurt anybody with what you're doing.
Yeah, and then I think that's what the show tried to kind of show as well, because there was that thing where they were looking at how the points affect people, and someone who bought flowers for his grandmother or something got deducted points because the flowers were picked from such and such a place and imported from such and such a place or whatever, that it eventually went to the negatives.
Mm-hmm. You could try and buy a tomato that you thought was locally sourced, and just because of all the sins of the people that they did going into, even before they got to the tomato itself was cursed, so that by you picking it up, mm-hmm. even though you thought you were doing a good thing, you ended up with 5 negative points.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing where it's like, you know, trying seems to be very important in this show, where it's like, okay, if you try to be a good person, well, where Eleanor would keep forking up, you know, but she kept trying.
Yeah. Well, and that was, Eleanor is, of course, the key to the whole show, because she's played by Kristen Bell, who generally plays very nice people, but she plays an excellently trashy trash person. It's fantastic. But because there's that inner sweetness that you expect from Kristen Bell, you kind of see that there's a good person underneath the surface, and her growth feels natural based on the fact that while she's great at playing this terrible character, she also has that good core to her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, every bad person has a good person somewhere inside. That's basically what they're trying to say.
Yeah, the casting of it was specific to make that. Like, if they'd had someone like Joe Pesci play an Eleanor Shellstrop-like character, you'd be sitting there going, I don't buy that this person's ever going to redeem themselves because it's Joe Pesci.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the philosophy is, you know, people make mistakes, but people are redeemable in the end.
Yeah. And even Joe Pesci.
I don't know what you have against Joe Pesci.
I felt like I had to carry the joke out from there, you know?
You know, we had a discussion last night about not wanting to meet your favorite...
Your heroes?
Artists.
Yeah.
Comedian, mm-hmm. you know, and those people who have fame. And you don't want to meet them. I actually don't want to meet a lot of the famous people that I really admire, because I'm afraid if I meet them, they will not meet my expectations of being a good person.
Yeah.
And then I will be crushed even more. Like, I know that I really like Nathan Fillion. I like him as an actor, but I've heard so many terrible things about him that he's just not a good person. Same with Joss Whedon.
Oh, Joss Whedon's a terrible person.
Yeah. Nathan Fillion surprises me.
I've always heard Nathan about him. Yeah.
Yeah, I always heard Nathan Fillion was pretty legit.
I've heard that he's a terrible person.
Oh,
so
really, that's sad.
Which is sad.
What did he do?
I don't remember. It was something I saw on YouTube or something about that.
YouTube, damn it! Ruining lives once again.
Right. Kristen Bell. I like her as an actress. And I'd be really disappointed to find out that she's not like the characters that she definitely plays.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Campbell, I've heard, is a phenomenal person. Keanu Reeves. Nobody can meet Keanu Reeves. I mean, he's everybody says he's like, you know, Jesus incarnate. But wouldn't it be terrible if you got him on a bad day?
I don't think
everybody
he has a bad
has
day.
Bad days. Everybody has bad days.
We know Kevin Smith had a bad day at least once.
Fuck Kevin Smith.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing too. Like, I can understand these famous people being sick of everyone's shit.
Oh, I'm sure.
Or
yeah.
just being like a genuinely bad person. Like,
for those curious,
my experience, that would be the day that I would meet that person, and I would meet them on a bad day, and then one, it could really ruin their life because they were mean to somebody and they didn't mean to be, or. You know, it would crush me as a person because the person I admire is a bad person. So, it's a loser situation.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it too is like when I, because there's subreddits for, you know, celebrity encounters and stuff.
Oh,
a lot of the ones where it's, but there's a lot of stuff where it's like, oh yeah, I walked up to Sir Patrick Stewart while he was having a very intimate conversation with a friend of his, and I interrupted him and asked him for a photo, which he happily obliged, but then I tried to talk to him about a specific Star Trek episode for 45 minutes and he got mad at me. What an asshole. You know, like,
no, you're the asshole for doing that. He's still a person.
Yeah. And I've met a few celebrities at like cons and stuff, and there's only been like two or three where I was like, man, fuck that guy. Gary Busey being the top of that list, but most of them were pretty cool. Bruce Campbell was very nice.
Good to know.
Yeah, Josette, we missed his line because Wizard World sucks, and they have like prepaid tickets to buy tickets to buy tickets.
Yeah.
And we missed like the second or third round, but we coincidentally like literally ran into him, and Josette was like, "Hi, Mr. Campbell," and he just finger gun pointed and winked at her. Goes, "What's up, babe?" And just kept walking. And no joke, she literally got weak at the knees and like it went, "Oh," and no joke. And then 3 days later, we found out she was pregnant with Catherine. So,
it's actually Bruce Campbell who got her pregnant.
Oh yeah, she has the chin for it. I think
those finger guns, they did it.
So we're rich is what I'm trying to say.
he needs a condom. Those fingers is what you're getting at.
Exactly.
I was gonna say, like, also for those curious, please see our episode on Kevin Smith for more terrible stories about Kevin Smith.
Oh, I can talk about that fat motherfucker. Oh, he's skinny now.
Anyway, continuing.
I'm fat too.
But yeah, Kristen Bell, like, I don't know. I wouldn't be worried about meeting her, I don't think. Just because from what the interviews I've seen her do and like her completely break down into tears just from seeing a sloth.
Like, I was actually just thinking that too.
That's just so pure.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah,
I think that's what I'm saying is that if you're gonna make a show like they did about people who have essentially done bad things, who've gotten into a bad place, and then try to redeem themselves at the end, they redeem themselves, sure, no argument there. But you know, does it really teach? I'll ask the question to the group. Did it actually teach you a lesson to be a better person?
No, I'm still going to do me. I'm just joking.
Everybody dead silent.
Wait, what? Like,
so, like, in watching the show, did it encourage you to be a better person?
Yeah.
Maybe a little.
But I like it in that it's the way the show presents it, it's more you know, fixing the system and stuff. It kind of presents it as a more obtainable way as other things are doing. Like with the whole tomato thing, like the tomato is cursed and like there's only so much you can do to make sure you are 100% good, but it's like, oh, just do as good as you can surrounding yourself, and like I don't know. I like the show in that it showed it like that. My brain's not cooperating very well.
I think ethically, like, my philosophy has always been, I don't go out of my way to do evil. Like, I might do some bad things, but it's not out of malicious intent. And, you know, there's obvious things that I won't do, like murder and things like that, you know, like the real bad stuff, but I try to...
So you say.
This is an alibi tape.
I'm just gonna help me with the murder. I'm gonna take Josh off my list now.
All right, out. Yep, so can't be me. But
well, ethically, when I took an ethics class in college, because you have to take at least two, one of the questions on the back of the book is, it's wrong to eat babies. And the only thing I could think of when I read that in my head was without barbecue sauce. So it became a thing. Like, it's, you know, it's bad. It's wrong to eat babies without barbecue sauce. Babies are hotter with Tabasco. And never sugarcoat an ugly baby. They're better as an entree. So ethically... Wow. Am I a terrible person?
Yes.
Or just by thinking these things?
No, yes.
Or
yes,
is it just because it's funny? Because it is funny.
It's, well, I mean, funny. It's just a dark sense of
humor. It was very funny. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're not actually eating the baby, so there's that.
So you
actions
say.
That go with that. Yeah. Like, right.
That's a long time to wait for a meal, really. Like, 3 months.
Honestly, yes. Yeah. But like,
well, you have to farm it. You got to set up a whole farm. It's a lot of work to get your baby in shape.
I don't like people that much. So I want to have a birthing group. A birth farm. Well, thank you.
You don't want to eat them fresh out. You will still want to let them grow a little so you get enough meat.
Right, and you get some meat on those bones. Yeah,
you're looking at like a year and a half investment. That's a lot of people if you want to make this a regular entree, you know?
It's like, you know, a toddler could feed a good family of seven,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so that's Thanksgiving right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying with this show, I guess what I'm trying to say is, well, a thought just popped into my mind too, where it's like, I like how I think, and this might be wrong, I don't know, because it has been a while since I watched it, but like, I like how the show kind of also demonstrates where it's like, you make your own bad place, you make your own good place. It's like, it's you, you know?
You're absolutely right. You make your world the way that you want it to be. So if you literally live in hell all the time, you're making that for yourself. If you're content in your life, then you will be content with whatever comes across your way. There was a story about an older guy who's, you know, on death's door, and he's talking to the nurse, and she says, "You're always happy." And he goes, "Life is short. Why wouldn't I be?" You know, and that's the point. If you try to make your life, when you focus on making your life better, better things will come to you. You make what you bring to yourself. If you talk negatively about things, then negativity will come to you. If you talk about positive things, positivity will come towards you. That's something that, you know, Mike and our mom taught all the time. You bring to you what you want in your life. So I guess the end of the moral of the story is, yes, people can change. People can change from being bad or evil to becoming good, because there's a good person in everyone. But you bring to yourself what you make. So you reap what you sow, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe that.
At the same time, though, I also appreciate the fact that while the characters on the show grew, they still managed to maintain a certain amount of their own personality. And I think a key identifier of this is the fact that Jason is a character that, by and large, you probably end up hating. Like,
I would say Jason is pure in his own way.
He is pure, unadulterated Jason of Florida. Like, that is the character through and through. But he's not a good person. And by the end of the show, he hasn't really changed all that much. And in a normal sitcom, he would be the character that everyone would be like, oh my god, I hate him so much. Why haven't they written him off already? But obviously, for the bounds of the show and the 53 episodes, they can't, because his growth is as important as the other three characters. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that all the characters kind of hate him when they first meet the real Jason. But over time, he just becomes this dumb, lovable guy that's hanging out with them, occasionally coming up with good bits of information, and like being just this like kind of redeemed person. And then like at the end of it, he and Eleanor just have this great relationship of the two of them being trash people, but in a good way.
Yeah, and I think it's funny that he actually reaches enlightenment because he didn't go through the door at the end.
Yeah,
and he just stays there for, I forget how long, I think it was like 1,000 years, enjoying nature and being like the quiet monk that
he was supposed to be
at the beginning.
Yeah.
And
you're right.
The irony of it is just completely lost on him.
Honestly, it was lost on me until you pointed out, but that is actually fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, the entire show, like, he never really got the ethics part. Like, his big solve was throwing Molotov cocktails at stuff.
Everything.
which was amazing. And it worked that one time. But they found a way to even have someone like Jason reach total enlightenment. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about this show, too, is because, like, as Josh kind of just, you know, demonstrated where it, I think there's so much in it that's worthwhile to think about, that, you know, upon one viewing might not, you know, parse out. I don't know. I just feel like there are more details. Like, if Mike and I were to watch it again, like, we would notice more.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched a few episodes to prepare for this, so a lot of the stuff is a lot more apparent the second time around.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, holy shit, they projected this in the first season and it paid off in the fourth. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And like they set up the whole idea that Michael rebooted stuff in like the first episode of second season, did like a bunch of the 800 reboots right then. And then they keep revisiting that time period that we only briefly glanced at. Like, over the course of the next three seasons, they make mention of characters from that reboot or things the characters learned and so forth. And while that feels like a bit of a retcon, at the same time, it's a good way to, like, condense a lot of story bits in and get things going, because they use it over and over again for new moments of poignancy as well.
Mm-hmm. I concur with it.
So, to wrap this up, I want to check and see if we, anyone else besides Becky and myself, have watched the next show from this production team, Upload.
I have not yet. It is on my to-do list. I started watching the first episode.
Yeah.
But
you got pulled away?
My 8-year-old was in the room, and I was like, I don't think this is going to be appropriate.
I can see where Josh is coming from.
Yeah, she's the... Yeah.
It's right around that age where it's like,
Yeah, she overhears something like, this is kind of a sidestep, but relevant, but we were eating dinner and she just looked up at me. She's like, Daddy? I was like, what? What's up? And she goes, she's like, do you ever just think that Donald Trump's a huge piece of shit? And I'm like... And I was like,
babes.
I was like, you can't say that word though.
Donald Trump?
that's a 4-letter word in our household.
When my kid was growing up, I have 2 children, but the one I usually talk about is Ryan. When he was growing up, he would actually turn to me and say, can I say a bad word? I'm going, are you having a bad day? Why would you need to say a bad word? I want to say a bad word. I go ahead. He said whatever, you know, bad word it was. And I go, well, if you use it in the right context, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. That was always our mom's rule. As long as you're using it appropriately and don't use it in front of people that will actually be mad.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of our rule too, but
I mean, yeah. She asked the question in the right context.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then she was, then she went a little further than, and she was like, someone should just smack him in the mouth. And I was like, oh.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
I was like, where did you hear, where did you hear that from?
Well, she's been browsing Facebook.
No. She's been, we've been rewatching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and I think, I think that's, some of that's kind of, yeah.
No, yeah, Uploads,
anyway.
Uploads an interesting show. Kind of plays on the same themes of life and afterlife, but in a very different way. It's, it doesn't have as strong a hook to the comedy, I think, as The Good Place did, but it does have room to grow, especially since this one doesn't feel like it's on a very set four-year, like, plan, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Something we can talk about in a couple years when that one wraps up.
I'm going to start watching those on my watch list.
There you go.
We watched Close Enough. Do you guys have HBO Max?
No.
Yes.
Watch Close Enough.
Okay.
Okay.
It's by the same guys who did Regular Show, which is one of my favorite television programs, but it's about mid-30s now, and it's amazing.
Okay.
I don't, but yes.
All right. Well, do we have anything else to say about The Good Place before we move on from this?
Yet.
Cool. Well, then this has been Not So Life from Asteroid G. I'm Mike Finkelstein.
I'm Josh Shea for inviting everyone to my butthole.
The Queen Bee.
And Bex.
We will see you next time.